Disturbing Interest is a Horrible Histories, Terrible Mysteries podcast. The past, and unfortunately the present, is often a bleak place. Listener discretion is advised.
If you're a fan of Disturbing Interests, please, for the love of God and all that is holy, like and subscribe. Your comments and your shares, it only feeds our weird and makes us stronger and stranger. Remember, without liking and sharing us, we won't survive. We need you. We need you to tell a friend, tell your priest a confession, tell your parole officer, tell your favorite luchador, your favorite conspiracy theorist, go on CNN, whisper it in Wolf Blitzer's ear, whatever it takes, man. Just get us out there because, you know, without you, there is no us. Because with us, you might be disturbed, but you're not alone.
Lynn, you know Valentine's Day is right around the corner, right?
Oh yeah, my favorite holiday next to Christmas.
Yeah, we all know how you feel about Christmas. But maybe you're just missing the right motivation to love. Feel my air quotes here, people. Love Valentine's Day. Like, maybe a fun and playful gift?
How playful are we talking here? Because, you know, Hobbit porn is totally my thing.
Yes. Well, I got Mr. Mao the I'm Nuts About You gift set from Ballsy, and that added something fresh to our fun. I mean, Mr. Mao has never been one to have swampy nether regions, but that was part of why he liked it so much. His clean, freakish ways loved the activated charcoal ball wash.
Activated charcoal? Oh yeah, no lazy charcoal around his parts.
I mean, would you trust Wilhelm's balls to lazy charcoal? We both know that he deserves better than that. That big German deserves to have activated charcoal ball wash. The gift set also came with this great nut rub that keeps his berries and bush smelling as fresh as the day is long. And with 6 fragrances to choose from, my sensitive sniffer was super happy.
The smell test does stand the test of time.
Mr. Mao's favorite part of the gift, though, was the sack spray. Now, no matter how hectic the day gets or how long Rocky's walks are, he can just spray one little spritz and never worry about being less than fresh. Plus, limited time scents just for the holiday. You know how I feel about limited time stuff.
Yes, your Beanie Baby collection is the stuff of legend. And it's appreciated in value, too. But I just don't like the idea of things like sulfites getting rubbed all over Wilhelm's junk and then getting up close and personal with mine.
Perfect. Ballsy makes their products paraben, synthetic dye, and even sulfite-free. Plus, they're made here in the U.S.
That makes sense. I mean, the world usually does associate those particular body parts with the United States of America.
Well, now with promo code INTEREST20, you and our listeners can get 20% off an excellent Valentine's Day gift and take the nose crinkle out of your loved one's nether wrinkles. This episode brought to us by Ballsy. Welcome back to Disturbing Interest, everyone. I am Regina King, your evil queen, and sitting next to me is my ever-beautiful partner.
Hi, I'm Lynn, your docent of darkness.
And today we have a special guest in the third seat.
Hi.
A shy newt. This is her first pod. Is this your first podcast?
Well, other than like one before, but it was different.
It was different with that podcast.
Yeah, that was a different podcast.
That podcast didn't love her like we do.
Okay. That podcast didn't have like canned wine and a dog. So was it even really a podcast?
Does it really count if it's your first time?
I mean.
Wait, does it?
So sitting next to us today is the amazing Lacey Nish Doom. I love that you keep waving.
I feel like our listeners can kind of hear that change, that swish in the air, and they know you're waving.
They know.
We have the most astute listeners, I guarantee it.
And I'm sure you noticed the difference in our audio quality. I'm so sorry, ladies and gentlemen. That new mic last week really kind of threw the cast. And so today, Lynn is rocking out her own new headset as well.
I feel like an air traffic controller. It's amazing. I feel like I could land a plane. I should not be allowed to. I don't know how, but I feel like I could.
I personally feel like I should go through life always wanting to land a plane. Like, I am ready.
Like,
I
am down here, plane.
Ready. You get your fucking ass down here, plane, and you think about what you've done.
I feel like even more than having the headset and landing the plane, I want to be that person with the two cool, like, flashlight lightsaber things. It just is like, dude, dude, dude. And again, like, you can see me. I'm making the little arm motions, but believe me, I know all of you, while you heard me say that, started involuntarily going, flapping your arms backwards.
Yes.
But I feel like that would be a really cool job, because not only would it be kind of an exciting, high stakes, like, you know, job type of thing, but it would also be incredibly great aerobic exercise. Like, you would get some really great upper body kind of action. You're walking backwards. It's like, good for your core. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know what? Bitches would die if I had that job. It would be like, I'm sorry, I just can't lift my arms. You fucking land yourself. Here. There's a dog with a running around. Three dogs in an overcoat can do that job better than I can. However, I can talk that plane.
You can talk
now.
About it. Well, see, whereas my job is literally just upper body strength all day, every day. So I can keep that, like, flappy motion going for hours. So
personally,
yeah.
I think that maybe I was born to be, like, a rinkside announcer. I'm just like, yes, feel the burn. Look
and
at him go.
And in this corner.
Yes. Yes, in this corner, you can see our guest host, Lacey Nishdoom.
I feel like if we're doing this ringside thing, Lacey ought to be in one of those bizarre, like, bikinis holding up a number.
We can make this happen.
We can make that happen? Okay. All right.
Between the two of us, we can make this happen in, like, 5 minutes. well, that is a fun kickoff to the cast, which is promising to be good, because Lynn has done all the research for this one, and I am nothing but color commentary.
This is weird. This is one of those episodes that I was like, oh, okay, we talked about doing it a few weeks ago. You were going to cover the Axeman, and I was going to look into yet another kind of related popular figure for, like, the spooky tours of New Orleans, Comte Saint Germain. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, cool. Jesus Christ, like, there's 700 of them, first of all. None of it is verifiable. This guy was a fabulist and a con man. So, and then other people just took that ball and ran with it and made up even crazier stories. And then more people were like, no, no, I'm Comte Saint Germain. No, I'm Comte Saint Germain. Like, they're Spartacus. So there's just, I mean, this is bizarre. And I found, in researching this, I both Muldered and Scullied myself, because I want to believe. I want to be like, he's a vampire, right? But the more I looked into it, I was like, this is bullshit. So, I mean, and again, so much of this is unverifiable hearsay and so on. So take everything that I'm telling you with a grain of garlic salt, because, again, this was a tough one.
This is a whole bucket full of salt kind of episode?
Yes, yes, it is. Okay. Like, we could make so many margaritas with this.
Oh, I am in.
And speaking of margaritas, I went to the fabulous box of terrifying canned wine. It's like a box of alcoholic dares. Like, this is the I dare you box.
It really is.
And I picked the one that scared me the most, because it's sangria. And what does sangria mean? En español,
blood.
Although, okay, so sangria is good, right? We can all agree that it's a delicious, when made properly, beverage. This is not going to be made properly, because, oh no, it's not just sangria, bitches. It's Capriccio watermelon sangria.
That's the best part.
And it's perfect, because sangria, blood, watermelon, bullshit. So that's what we're going to have. I'm going to have some bullshit blood here. And the
this,
can.
I think this can itself.
The fucking
proves.
Can is epic. Because the can scares me. You've heard what I've drunk, and it scares me.
I'm telling you, I think this can right here should prove to everyone I am both an excellent and terrible friend at the same time.
Oh my God. So let me describe this to you, and I'll read. Let me start off by saying it looks like the 80s. It's this sort of tealish green aqua color. Which is fine. That's nice, springy, summery, nice.
I would go with 90s.
Okay, and then it's covered in tiny pictures of watermelon. Okay, fine. And some citrus, like some oranges, lemon. Okay, that goes in sangria. And then bananas and pineapples. The fuck? What the fuck? No, that doesn't... None of this goes in wine.
It's tropical.
It's tropical. And then, just as like the punchline to this terrible joke that I'm about to inflict on myself, at the bottom of it, under the descriptor of what you're about to put in your goddamn mouth, it says, made with premium grape wine. Wow. So, you know, it's grape wine with natural flavor. Mm. You could hear that. And grape skin extract added. What?
Why would you add grape
More
skin?
More grape extract.
The skin extract, particularly.
Okay, so there is a thing called Mega Purple, which is a great natural grape skin extract that you can add to wine. You should not, but you can if you're making kind of big batch wine and you want it to be very consistent. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a dye.
Oh.
It's a natural dye, but it can also have a lot of tannins and other shit that you don't want in it. So basically, I'm holding headache in a can. I hope you people are happy. I'm doing science for you. God. All right. Let me open this fucker. Here we go. The one sound effect. Oh, that was satisfying.
That was nice.
Good.
That was a good one, yeah.
I like that.
All right, here we go. Oh, God, it smells like a fucking Jolly Rancher, you guys. It smells like a Jolly Rancher. I'm not lying, am I?
Oh, my God. It smells like an alcoholic Jolly Rancher.
It smells
that
like...
That smells like something I drank when I was very young.
It smells like high school parties when somebody's mom is gone.
Oh,
God,
yes. Oh, Jesus, that reminds me of high school.
Yeah, I mean, not me, because... I was a nerd with no friends, so I didn't do that sort of thing, but
did that sort of thing.
Yeah, you guys were cool. I was not cool.
I don't know if we were cool.
We were cool.
Were we?
We were cool.
I was not cool. I might have been the kid you gave a swirly in the bathroom
to. I would never do that, though.
No, you guys are nice.
No, I mean, we were nice.
You were nice, but you were cool.
We were harmless.
I was not cool.
Did bad things.
Things.
I had thick glasses and buck teeth and bad hair, and now I just have... buck teeth and bad hair, so it's good.
You have epic hair.
Amazing. I do have epic hair.
You do
I
have
weird
epic hair.
Hair.
You have epic hair.
Okay, I'm gonna. Oh, I don't know if I can get this past my nose. Okay, I'm trying it. Oh Lord, it's maybe the last you ever hear
hold
from me.
Your nose?
Okay, here it goes. Oh Jesus God! Oh, that's not right. It tastes. Oh, it's like. Starts Jolly Rancher and then goes to like a Mad Dog 2020 kind of place.
Oh
no!
Oh my God! I haven't thought about that in so long.
Oh man! And then it ends in like a malt liquor kind of place. It's all over the vomit map. I'm gonna try another one because I kind of get trying to get the mouth acclimated to this shit.
Ease yourself in.
No, it does. Oh, it gets more watermelon-y. And not like watermelon, like a real watermelon. Because I've had delicious watermelon-based beverages made from an actual melon that you have juiced. Shit. This tastes like it's probably taking the enamel off my teeth right now.
This tastes like a bad night and a really bad one-night stand. This bad idea.
This tastes like
this
the
tastes
worst
like
morning
mistakes.
After. Yeah, this...
yeah, I was going to say, it's like the vomit that I remember tasting in high school.
Yeah, that's the juvenile mistake machine right there.
This tastes like teen pregnancy, you guys. I don't want this. Oh, and then it gets
why
bitter.
Why do I get the feeling your mom would drink that?
Oh yeah, because she's classy. That's why. It's classy.
I got my pinky out, too, because this is a very fancy beverage. Oh, okay. I'm putting this down. Shudder. It tastes like a shudder is what it tastes like.
What the fuck was that you drank that time? Gin and rock candy?
No, it's probably rock and rye,
which is a rye-based
beverage made with what tastes like Murphy's oil soap.
I could have forgived that with rye?
It's a classic old-fashioned like mid-century thing that people used to drink. I didn't say they should, but they did.
Yeah, that's what our grandparents used to drink.
Because I drink old fashions, but they're not like that.
And you know this is not like an old fashioned.
No, after hearing that is the shit our grandparents used to drink, it explains some things about our grandparents.
No, grandparents used to do some nasty. Mm-hmm.
This is not an old fashioned. This is like somebody lures you into a dark alley with the promise of an old fashioned, then hits you over the head with a crowbar and mugs you and takes a kidney. That's what it
fucking
tastes like.
Rude.
It was really terrible. However, by the end of the show, you were rather smashed, and it was pretty fun.
God, and it's tiny.
It was like that big.
On this one, this is actually, this is 13.9% alcohol, so it's
I was noticing
and
that
it's very sturdy. Tall. It's a, and it's it is, there's a lot of it.
Oh God! definitely, if you like watermelon hell, this is gonna give you the bang for your buck.
So I'm gonna give two ass up for Capriccio watermelon sangria. Oh my! Oh boy!
Huh. All right. Well, Lacey, tell our listeners a bit about yourself. Like, what do you do in the Seattle area aside from, you know,
coming on this podcast, watching us drink horrible things for science?
I'm a local performer and dancer and model, and I teach classes.
That's right, over at Studio Deep Roots, right?
Yeah, Studio Deep Roots on Monday night.
Awesome, awesome. In fact, we have run a reel for you before, which was fun. And I have to say, I enjoy your glasses personally.
Thank you.
I can shake my hips.
Yes, because they're belly dance classes?
Yeah. So this new one is going to start up in February, on February 3rd. And it's going to be how to utilize small movements to make them big into like water so you flow and have constant movement.
I'm very interested in that one, you know, water sign. I like making the body flow. These motions are fun. Of course, yet again, we're doing hand motions, which you cannot see.
They're really good hand motions, though.
She's undulating.
I was undulating.
Like kelp, like a human kelp forest.
I love how all three of us now have moved like this.
Like this is a visual medium.
We put on an excellent visual for radio. Yes, we do. So, Lacey, when are your classes exactly? If our Seattle listeners or surrounding area listeners want to find you, where can they?
That's at Deep Roots Studio or Studio Deep Roots. And it's in Greenwood, Seattle. Yeah, Monday, 7 to 8 p.m.
Cool. Do you have like an email address they can email you at for information?
And I apologize for this now, but it's what I got. So it's Lacey. At houseofdoom.co. C-O, not com.
I love this.
Co. House of Co.
Houseofdoom.co. Lacey at houseofdoom.co.
I find it makes it sound a little excitingly threatening. Like, oh, doom dancing. Do tell. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I feel both intrigued and threatened. That's just how I like it. That's right.
And so are these classes like you have to have prior belly dance experience? You have to know how to like balance a sword on your face and all of that kind of stuff?
Do you have to know what water is?
Nah. Okay, it's okay.
Cool.
Know what water is. No swords, no water. It's all good.
Yeah, no, it's for all levels. And also it's going to teach like how to find your own kind of movement and do improv style dancing. So I'm going to get
more hand motions.
I'm getting more hand motions.
Maybe I do need one of those.
Yeah, you totally need the air traffic controller wands. Yes. Yeah. The lightsabers.
You're like, come on.
Oh, yeah. I'm over here doing hand motions. Yet again, we have covered how
it's all
awesome
semaphore.
This is.
Let's just do the rest of this podcast in semaphore.
We could. Okay. We totally could. All right. Well, all of you out there who don't know how to shake your hips or move your ass like water, if you want to move your ass, you want to learn how to move your ass, you contact Lacey. She teach you how to move your ass good.
Even if you are the stiffest white boy ever to, say, for instance, come from Germany, hi, Will, and have no ability to. It's like, I love the man, but like from the chest up, yes, he can move. Like he can kind of cycle his arms like he's sort of.
Kind of like he's robot dancing.
Like, you know, it's the white boy. Yeah, I'm kind of punchy fists forward. Yeah.
I'm agreeing with this motion very much.
Yes. And then from like the knees down, there's some bobbing. There's maybe a little ankle motion.
Hey, yeah.
But it's like
bob.
Everything from like the chest through to the knees is just in stasis. It is frozen in carbonite, and it, you know, it cannot move.
You're not supposed to move those areas of the body.
Why white boys? You can do that.
Irish history tells us that you're only allowed to move from the knee down when dancing.
It's Western dance in general, I think. Like,
is it toxic masculinity?
Well, I feel it can be the same for other cultures that, because like a lot of cultures celebrate when they dance. The Western culture doesn't celebrate when they dance. It's all about this performance and different aspects and technicality instead of just letting it go. And I think that's a big problem for a lot of people.
So what I'm hearing is, go to Studio Deep Roots.
Yeah.
And let it go.
Yeah, let it go. Let it go. Oh, no. Disney's going to shut us down
right
now.
Oh, shit. They're coming.
No. I feel my soul being lurched out of my body right now.
By a Disney Dementor. Just.
Oh, my God. Yep. Wait, does it have a Mickey face?
Yes. Yes. He looks like a floating, horrible, like, cloak of doom, but with mouse ears. Oh, that is God. Who Disney sends if you make a Baby Yoda drawing. Yes.
So I don't think we shared with the listeners how I thought I was being attacked with
the Dementor. We did last. Yes, okay. Last episode we discussed the coat solid. Dementor.
Yes. So just so you all know, I have yet to be attacked by a Dementor. The coats live in a different place. I'm all good. Haven't tried to pee the bed lately because
that's good.
Of it. Yeah,
that was healthy.
That was very alarming. I mean, if I tried to, I probably wouldn't be able to do it either just because I'm that big of a fuck up. But, you know.
That's fair.
Anyway, so Lynn, tell us what we are here to hear today.
Well, okay. As I said before, this was a wild ride of research down the wiki hole. And I don't know really how much of what I discovered has any real relationship directly to the truth.
I didn't know how much I wanted to say wiki hole in my life.
Wiki hole. wiki hole. But regardless of how much of this really happened and how much of this is just eons and eons of hearsay piling onto hearsay till it makes like a fuck shit stack of hearsay. Basically, I don't know, but it is very entertaining. And I'm not saying it's vampires, but it's vampires. And I hope that you'll enjoy it. Again, grab your garlic bread. You want to eat some of that? Get your silver-plated turtlenecks together and get those on just for safety on this one.
Hold a steak when you go to sleep,
sure.
Just in case.
Yeah, just go full Buffy on this thing because could be vampires. So this is also, again, our Travel Channel episode because it started out with a New Orleans inspiration, kind of the jumping off point, if you will, to France, the UK, Poland maybe?
Travel Channel, hit us up. Right? Disturbing Travels, we got you covered. This right here could totally be an episode.
It could. I mean, it went to Transylvania.
Oh.
It went to Atlantis.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it went to Atlantis. Yes, it did. And it even touched down at some point in our fair city of Seattle. Whoa.
And in turn, went straight into my heart.
Yes.
And maybe yours too, listener. Let's
like
check this
steak.
Out.
So, once again, who am I reporting on? Well, I'm going to tell you the little story of the many lives of the Comte Saint-Germain.
Woo!
So, okay, let me first start out by saying there are quite a lot of people with the surname of Saint-Germain, to say nothing of multiple actual Catholic saints named Germain, which again is not to be confused, of course, with Jermaine Jackson of the Jackson Five. Hee hee! Or Jermaine Clement of Flight of the Conchords. Totally different. Jermaine, not even an R in that one.
Hoo-hoo.
Hoo-hoo, yeah. Or even with the delightful elderflower liqueur called Saint Germain that tastes like sweet floral boozy perfume.
I've never had that.
So it's pretty good. So here's my extra tidbit of booze-related trivia for you drinky types. That particular liqueur, Saint Germain, despite its super fancy-looking Art Deco bottle and all the labeling and its super Frenchy name, you know what year it was actually created in?
Let me guess. I suck at this. 1978.
2007.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's not even two decades old, guys.
I remain sucking at this.
Yeah, it's like a modern invention. And it was created by an American distiller named Robert Cooper, who was kind of the scion of this liqueur importing family in Philadelphia. And this drink became so popular as a classy way to sweeten up a cocktail that it's been dubbed bartender's ketchup.
Oh, I probably have had it.
Yeah, so it's a way to sort of add a little bit of a sweetness and a little floral note without it being like, bleh, grenadine or anything like that. Like, without actually dumping sugary syrup in things.
Cool.
So, sadly, its creator, Robert Cooper, died suddenly in 2016 at the ripe young age of 39.
Whoa.
Yeah. Murder. So, and I kind of researched it, like, was it an accident? So, you know, did he fall into a vat? What happened?
I always go with murder.
Well, there's no cause of death that's ever been released.
Murder!
So I think it's safe, if tacky and truly horrible of us, to assume it was vampires.
Oh.
Yeah.
So... Well,
they took their name in vain or
supernatural
something.
Supernatural murder.
Yeah. Supernatural, exactly. And so seriously, this whole goddamn episode is just going to be me going, it's vampires! So if you don't like vampires, this is not your episode.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the various many Germains. And there are a ton of Germains. So let me lay out with the sort of, you know, tacks to the wall and the red string are various Germani dramatis personae, if you will, so you do not get as confused and in the weeds as I was to who exactly is Germain to our Saint Germain.
Will the real Saint Germain please stand up?
Yes. Will the real slim Germani please stand up? Yes. Exactly. Yes. So let's start with the actual Catholic saint, Saint Germain of Paris, who actually does not seem to have fuck all to do with the Comte or the rest of our story, other than the name. And incidentally, for those of you who are not Frenchophones, the French word for count is Comte. So we're talking about basically the Count Saint Germain.
And he is often called the Count
the Saint Germain. Yes.
I wonder if it's just the title that makes you a vampire sometimes.
Maybe. You could just become a count, and then suddenly you're like, I really like raw steak and nighttime.
Your neck looks very supple.
Right? Yes. I mean, I don't think it happens terrible. If you become an earl or a duke.
I mean, we haven't heard,
or the Duke of Earl. I don't know, you know.
We haven't heard a lot of, you know, dukes out there.
Not really. Like the biting duke, that's not really a thing.
Oh,
no.
The count is in town. The count attacks.
See?
You don't hear that with the duke.
The duke. The duke's in town. Duke. Yeah, it's
pretty cool.
It's not as vampirizey a word. I don't know. Vampire-y. I don't know why it's a count.
I like it.
I just know it's the count. I don't know. Saint count, this actual saint, Saint Germain, started out as a bishop of Paris in the 6th century, and this dude was credited with basically helping the king at the time to become a good person and a better Christian and to serve his people better.
All about who you know.
Right? So, and this guy actually seemed like a delightful person, like a generally good guy who deserved to be sainted, because he was super big on giving alms to the unfortunate, and thus was given the sweet-ass rap name, Father of the Poor.
That is a sweet-ass rap name.
Yeah, Father of the Poor. So he's like Bernie Sanders. We like this guy. He's a nice guy.
However, if you say that in the South, like, that guy's the Father of the Poor, they'd be like, oh, Joe? Yeah, it sure is. I mean, like, that's like every other person.
He has a lot of poor children. Yeah.
That's a lot of poor people.
A lot of poor people. So, yeah. So this guy, nice fella, no vampire-y stuff that I could dig up at all about the actual Saint Germain. Although, apparently, in times of disease, war, famine, crisis, after he had died, people in Paris used to carry his relics around that they would unearth, that they'd been keeping in the, I don't know, in the broom closet at the Abbey. And they'd basically parade these relics around the streets of Paris to ward off evil.
That sounds like some fake shit to me. That sounds like relic forgery.
Well, it just sounds like they thought he was such a good dude that they were like, hey, bad stuff's happening. His shin bone, that's going to keep the plague out.
You see, most people think, hey, they really honored this guy. Like, really honored, not honored, words. I have no words.
They had respect for this dude?
Yes, they really respected this guy enough.
Because here's his tibia.
Yeah, here's his tibia. I'm over here like, I know that time period. That was a fucking relic forgery.
That wasn't his real tibia.
That wasn't his real tibia.
That was Sonny's tibia.
That's right.
Sonny the drunk. Yeah.
Fucking Joe's tibia.
But, yeah, so the saint at
still
least.
Still might have been the father of the poor, though.
I mean, I don't know. But anyway, this particular saint, Saint Germain, pretty decent guy. And then the reason that a lot of people end up with this surname of Saint Germain is that a very famous abbey, which was also the burial place for a lot of these Merovingian kings, is on the left bank of Paris. And it was named after him because that was where he was buried. And it's called Saint Germain des Prés. And that also became then the name of that quarter in Paris. And a quarter in Paris is like a neighborhood, basically. And so a lot of people got named for that neighborhood because that's where they grew up or whatnot. So that's one potential reason why there's so many people with the surname of Saint Germain. Not because the actual Saint Germain was out literally fathering the poor. It's just from that particular quarter. So that's pretty much all that I think Saint Germain really has to do with Saint Germain. Like, the Saint Germain just has the name for the Count Saint Germain.
So was the name really picked up because people would immigrate into the area and then they would take the name as the last name of the district they came from their place?
That seems legitimate. I tried to look into that. It seems like that it wasn't so much that people got a last name because of the saint, but that they got that last name because of the neighborhood.
That's what I thought.
So okay, cool. That's the closest connection I could find between the Saint Germain and Saint Germain.
So,
none.
Just so you know, people, this is our story. We're sticking to it. Yes. We could be wrong. Always possible.
Maybe Saint Germain was actually later Saint Germain, but it doesn't seem like that. So the story of our Count is a much more convoluted and shrouded in myth-making, both by the Count himself and by a number of people who got pretty weird and obsessed and up in his business about him about 100 years after he died. I mean, allegedly. The first time. Yes.
He's died three times?
A bunch of times.
Okay.
Or never did. Or, So we only really have, the only date that we have actually fixed for this dude is the date of his supposed death, which is February 27th, 1784. So that gives you a timeline of him. And that's the only real date around him that we know for certain. The date and place of his birth, and indeed his parentage at all, it's pretty open to speculation. And also, again, this wasn't a great time for birth certificates, records, etc., but he also was very cagey about all of this stuff. So
was one of those time periods where you could kind of get yourself lost.
Yes, very easily. Yes. So the most popular theory on his origin, and one that the Count himself kind of maybe spread or certainly never denied, was that he was the first son of Francis II Rákóczi, the Prince of Transylvania. Sorry, I can't help it.
No, you can't.
It's a tick that I'm sorry in advance.
No apologies needed.
So allegedly, he was a one Leopold George, the firstborn son of this Francis II, who was recorded as dying at the age of 4, but in this recounting of the events, this child was actually secreted away to Italy to be educated by one Gian Gastone, who was the last of the Medicis and a relative on his mother's side. And the reason for all this subterfuge and child swappage was to protect the kid from persecution by the Habsburg dynasty, who Francis, this guy's alleged father, had led an uprising against in Hungary.
And we do know that these things did happen.
Sure.
Like, this is not just, oh, sure, Count, okay. I mean, it might be. I love watching you take a drink of that every single time.
I was like, oh, my mouth is dry. I'll drink. No,
every
God.
Time you drink, I'm like, oh, my God.
This is my punishment right here. So that's one. That's probably the most popular theory of what his actual origin might be. But other hypotheses about his parentage include him being the natural son, which is a nice fancy way to say bastard child, of the widow of King Charles II of Spain and Comte Adinero, who was a nobleman she was friendly with, or also that he was the result of a liaison between an unnamed minor Italian princess and a tax collector called Rotondo. Ooh, that guy sounds sexy.
I'm sorry, Rotondo. I want to say Rotondo? Here, I love it when things like that are so fucking specific. A
very
tax
specific.
Collector name Rotondo. So we've got from callback to one of our holiday, big ass holiday special. I think it was, we had the lawyer who led the parade of the damned.
Yes.
And now we have a tax collector named Rotondo who allegedly fucked a queen.
Knocked up a princess. A minor princess.
A minor princess.
Because they were, not even they a queen. Were thick on the ground, the princesses of Italy, apparently.
I mean, who hasn't?
Right? That's what I like to do on a Friday afternoon. Oh, knock yeah. up a princess.
Same. Yeah. Same.
Still other people, and these are people that kind of wanted to knock this guy and his reputation down a peg, suggested that he was actually an Alsatian Jew named Simon Wolf, or that he was a Spanish Jesuit named Aymar.
Why do you always got to knock down the Jews?
It's a popular hobby, I'm afraid.
Your people have just been knocked down pretty repeatedly.
Much. Yeah, we get knocked down, but we get up again. Kind of. I mean, this that is true. Kinda.
Yes,
that should is be true. The yep. theme song of Jews.
I think we need to put you on a chair and dance around with that.
Yeah, okay, if you want to.
I mean, it is the custom of your people.
It is the custom, yeah. But, anyway, basically, this count, and again, we don't even know who made him a count. He made himself a count.
He may have made himself a count. He didn't want to aim too high.
Didn't want to go for like, archbishop.
Yes, prince, something like that. No, so he was count. Like, it's cool. I am a natural born son, so I'm a count.
Count,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
But he was so good at concealing his real origins and spinning a web of fabulous speculation about himself that even the greatest consummate BS artist of the last, like, century and a half, the great Phineas Taylor Barnum, P.T. Barnum himself, included the count in his 1886 treatise on great fakes of the world, The Humbugs of the World.
Wow.
So, yes, he... Among the BS artists of the world, this guy is kind of, he's a legend. He's okay. a legend. Yes.
Man, P.T. Barnum, that's somebody we're going to have to do an episode on one of these days.
And it will not involve a musical or Hugh Jackman.
Oh, I love me some Hugh Jackman, though.
He's a Hugh Jackman, and I love him for
he
it.
Is.
He is.
He is.
Yeah. So
I'm
what?
All about that Jackman being huge.
Yep. All about the act, Hugh Jackman. Yeah. Anyway, so yes. But what did this alleged Comte Saint-Germain of the mysterious origins do exactly to become so fascinating to so many people?
I don't know, but all I can see is him as Ryan Reynolds now that we were talking about Hugh Jackman.
I mean, that's fine. Why don't we, Ryan Reynolds, have your people call me. I will totally give you this whole script that I've been writing about the life of Deadpool as the Count Saint-Germain. Sure, why not? Let's do it. Let's go. We can get Detective Pikachu in there while we're at it. I mean, let's
anything
make it a crossover.
Want. Yes.
Yeah, anything you want, man. But anyway, how did this guy, why do people care about him other than he was good at making up a weird name? Well, he was a bit of a Renaissance con man. He was a composer of operas. Oh. He was a chemist / alchemist. He was a diplomat and possibly even a spy for the French court.
Okay, I'm saying if you're doing all that shit, maybe you're not a con man. Maybe you're just very talented and have a shameful past.
Yeah, maybe he's a talented Mr. Ripley. I don't know.
I don't know his life.
I mean, yeah.
We don't even know his real name.
We really don't.
Okay.
You can go online to YouTube and just kind of type in Comte Saint-Germain, and you will get to hear some of these sonatas that still survive that he wrote being performed.
Holy cow.
Yeah, you can rock out with the count.
I'm going to be doing that later.
Yeah, no, he wrote quite a number of sonatas, and then he contributed quite a number of songs to this very popular opera called L'Inconstanza di Lusa, which was like a huge hit in London in 1745.
I would love to see you do some kind of wacky dance to one of his songs.
Yeah.
You could call it the Vampire Wiggle.
There you go. So, and just after that, just after this, basically, he was kind of like Andrew Lloyd Webber, right? But just after that, he was arrested in London while his play was still, his opera was still going on.
I don't think we want to make a comparison of him to Andrew Lloyd Webber.
He could totally have written Cats. I mean, maybe. Maybe he did. You don't know his life. We really don't know his life.
He may be Andrew Lloyd Webber for all we know. Oh.
But he got arrested while this big hit was playing on suspicion of espionage, but then he was released when no evidence to that effect turned up. And to be fair, this was a huge time of great political upheaval throughout all of Europe, so people were constantly being run in for questioning, like, hey, foreign dude, what are you doing here, and things like that. But I think it's kind of fascinating that, you know, he had these run-ins with the law, and even they were like, eh?
This was the same time period when a dude who ate everything ate a box and was sent over enemy lines. Yes.
Yes.
Same countries, everything.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. This is like 7 years war, crazy bastard, banana pants, European history time.
Yeah. I mean, they probably just held on to him. And once he didn't shit out a box, they were like, okay he's not cool. A spy.
Yeah.
We've seen what France does. Send him back.
Yeah. Not Saint Germain, the guy that ate a baby. Did that.
Yes, he shit a box out.
There was
out,
no shitting of boxes that I could find in any of the literature regarding the Count Saint Germain.
Hashtag callback to our eating a baby
episode. There was really no poop at all involved in this.
Well, that's good.
In fact, there was no eating because you don't need to eat food, do you, if you're a vampire?
You don't need to
And that does come up.
Wine.
It does come up that the guy was not much of an eater. So I actually was able to fairly easily turn up contemporary accounts of this dude in my very simple online research and tiny bit of actual book reading. This art historian and antiquarian who was living in London at the same time as Saint Germain, a guy named Horace Walpole.
Oh, what a great name.
Horace Walpole.
Walpole. Horace Walpole.
Yes. Well,
Horace, you're Walpole, ma'am.
Well, he wrote about this Saint Germain being run into on espionage suspicion. He wrote about that, and I shall read it to you, and it is bizarre. The other day they seized an odd man who goes by the name of Count Saint Germain. He has been here these 2 years and will not tell who he is or whence, but professes 2 wonderful things. The first, that he does not go by his right name, and the second, that he never had any dealings with any woman, nay, nor with any succedaneum. Now, I had to look that fucker up. I was like, succubus? He never had sex with a succulent? What the fuck? I looked it up, and that just means substitute or surrogate. So he never has had any relations with a lady or whatever the hell passed for, I don't know, a fleshlight at the time? That he kept himself chaste, essentially.
Gotcha. Okay, okay.
And Walpole goes on to say, he sings, plays on the violin wonderfully, composes, is mad, and not very sensible. He is called an Italian, a Spaniard, a Pole, a somebody that married a great fortune in Mexico and ran away with her jewels to Constantinople, a priest, a fiddler, a vast nobleman. The Prince of Wales has had unsatiated curiosity about him, but in vain. However, nothing has been made out against him. He is released, and what convinces me that he is not a gentleman stays here and talks of his being taken up for a spy.
What the hell?
So basically, yeah, he's like, yeah, this guy seems like a banana pants, crazy tall tale teller, and seems nutty, but he's kind of cool and entertaining, and he can do a bunch of stuff, and, you know, he's just nuts, not a spy, so cool. That's my little Cliff Notes version of what this says.
I like the fact that they included pretty much, like, he doesn't have sex with either women or fleshlights.
Yeah. I don't know why that's germane
I mean,
to this, but
that
sure.
time period, would a fleshlight be a pumpkin?
You know, it doesn't bear thinking about.
You're welcome wurzel. For that one.
No.
A mangle wurzel.
A mangle wurzel, yes. Yeah. The turnip. People use a lot of shit. Turnips turned up as a lot of shit. Like, they turned up as, apparently now we know, fleshlights, but as jack-o'-lanterns. Like, who looks at a turnip and thinks, yeah, I'm gonna carve that?
Yeah.
I don't, weirdos. Yeah. Was it like those Apple dolls?
I don't
that everybody's
know.
Creepy aunts made, like, back in the 80s, where they would, like, take an apple and, like, make a little face in it and let it get all, like, creepy and dried up, and then it was a doll?
I think that might just be you.
It might just be Western Pennsylvania. That's a fucked up place. Yeah. Voodoo dolls made from apples.
California
there's not a lot
did
to do
not
there.
Have that. We had corn husk dolls.
Oh, yeah. We did those too. Dolls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dollies. But back to our count. So I have yet another further contemporary account of his bizarreness that was given by Lady Jemima York, who was in the audience when he gave a private musical performance at this time in London. And she writes that she was very much entertained by him, or at him, the whole time. I mean the oddness of his manner, which it is impossible not to laugh at. Otherwise, you know he is very sensible and well-bred in conversation. She went on. He is an odd creature, and the more I see him, the more curious I am to know something about him. He is everything with everybody. He talks ingeniously with Mr. Ray, philosophy with Lord Willoughby, and is gallant with Miss York, Miss Carpenter, and all the young ladies. But the character and philosopher is what he seems to pretend to, and to be a good deal conceited of. The others are put on to comply with les manières du mode, but that, you are to suppose, is his real characteristic. And I can't but fancy he is a great pretender in all kinds of science, as well as that he has acquired an uncommon share in some. So, again, let me just translate that to normal people talk in 2020. He was basically a very charming enigma to all these fancy folks whose company he kept. He basically knew, as many con men do, that the secret to your shamming success is to basically charm people and keep the fuck moving, right?
Or he was a vampire.
Or he's a vampire. That's entirely popular. Possible.
He just had all that knowledge built up from all those years of living.
Yeah. Records show that he first arrived at the French court in 1748, and by the following year, he had been employed by Louis XV for diplomatic missions. And it was here that the legends around him in terms of his abilities as an alchemist and as a renowned scholar, and perhaps even someone possessed of an unnaturally long life, truly began to take shape.
I just want somebody to start, you know, legends of me being an alchemist.
Well, like, I can
what
tell
do
you
I
how.
Have to do?
You know what you need? I'll tell you exactly how.
Tell me what I need.
Get your ass a mime.
What?
A mime.
Like
did
a
I stutter?
Mime?
I said a mime.
White face, gloves,
correct.
Mime.
Walking against the wind, a fucking mime. Marcel Marceau. That's how you do it. Shall I elaborate?
Please do.
Okay. An English comedian and mime. Anytime there's a mime, I'm like, yes, it's gold. The guy was named as Milord Gower, began to impersonate him as part of his act in performances to the salons in Paris, further exaggerating some of the already credibility-straining claims that Saint Germain himself had made about his life. For instance, Milord Gower had a bit where he, acting in the persona of Saint Germain, claims to have tutored Jesus as a lad. Truly exaggerated satirical claims about Germain's life began to be taken as actually coming from the lips of the man himself, and thus was born the legend of the immortal Saint Germain.
Wow.
Thanks to a fucking mime. Mimes make vampires. Totally true.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
now
science.
We know the origin of vampires. It's not with Dracula.
No, it's fucking mimes.
Mimes.
Fucking mimes.
God
yep.
damn it. They would be the seed of the unholy union.
Pretty much. So another legendary figure of this time period, the Italian author, adventurer, and famous womanizer, Giacomo Casanova.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah. Geez. He actually had something to say about his fellow traveler, Saint Germain, and he referred to him as the celebrated and a learned impostor in his own memoirs.
Wow.
Yes. And I will read you a short passage, and it is fucking adorable. So, are you ready? Okay, let's do it. I'm going to try to do an Italian accent, and I'm super sorry. Anybody that is from Italy listening to our podcast, I'm bad
knows
at this.
Anyone from Italy or has ever eaten spaghetti,
yeah.
We are
super
just
sorry
going to
in
apologize
advance.
Right
I feel
right
like
now.
I'm going to sound like a Mario from, like, Nintendo.
Yes.
I'm very sorry about this in advance. So, the most enjoyable dinner I had was with Madame de Robert Gergi, who came with the famous adventurer known by the name of Count Saint Germain. This individual, instead of eating, talked from the beginning of the meal to the end, and I followed his example in one respect, as I did not eat, but listened to him with greatest attention. It may be safely said that as a conversationalist, he was unequaled. So already
aww.
There's the, he doesn't eat, he just talks. Saint Germain gave himself out for a marvel and always aimed at exciting amazement, which he often succeeded in doing. He was a scholar, linguist, musician, and chemist, good-looking, and a perfect ladies' man. For while he gave them paints and cosmetics, he flattered them, not that he would make them young again, which he modestly confessed was beyond him, but that their beauty would be preserved by means of a wash, which he said cost him a lot of money, but which he gave away freely. He had contrived to gain the favor of Madame de Pompadour, who had spoken about him to the king, for whom he had made a laboratory, in which the monarch, a martyr to boredom, tried to find a little pleasure or distraction, at all events, by making dyes. The king had given him a suite of rooms at Chambord, and 100,000 francs for the construction of a laboratory, and according to Saint Germain, the dyes discovered by the king would have a materially beneficial influence on the quality of French fabrics. This extraordinary man, intended by nature to be the king of impostors and quacks, would say in an easy, assured manner that he was 300 years old, that he knew the secret of universal medicine, that he possessed a mastery over nature, and that he could melt diamonds, professing himself capable of forming, out of 10 or 12 small diamonds, one large one of the finest water, without loss of any weight. All this, he said, was a mere trifle to him. Notwithstanding his boastings, his barefaced lies, and his manifold eccentricities, I cannot say I thought him offensive. In spite of my knowledge of what he was, and in spite of my own feelings, I thought him an astonishing man, as he was always astonishing me. So, what I gather from this is that a lot of people knew he was, in many ways, totally full of shit, but they also found it delightful and amusing and useful shit, so they just went with it.
So he was like the reality TV of their generation.
Kinda. You know, he was an entertaining fraud.
And he knew Madame de Pompadour. That right there just blows me away.
Oh, wait. Like, he gets embroiled with her faction, and oh, yeah, there's a whole bunch of intrigue.
Tell away.
It feels to me like he used his knowledge of science and his charm and his kind of learnedness to basically weasel his way into the courts of a lot of very famous kind of people in order to kind of enrich himself and embroil himself into kind of the movers and shakers at the time.
Not unlike Ra-Ra Rasputin.
Yes.
Except just seemingly lacking of the same kind of sexual lust.
Right. No lover of the Russian queen. There was a cat who really was gone. Sorry, I can't
you
stop
can't.
Myself.
Yeah, I know.
No it's one okay. can stop themselves when you, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't, it, so he, Casanova says he's a ladies' man, but to me it doesn't sound like he's like, let's make the sex, but more like, oh, hello, my most charming and beautiful pet. Let me give you my special, you know, Olay Regenerist serum to make you beautiful, you know, and help keep you as charming as I know you to be.
I don't trust a man when he comes at me with face cream.
Right? No. You should not.
Let me cream your face is never
I got some way. Avon. Yeah, I got some magical alchemical Avon for you, baby.
That's right. That's right.
Basically. So sometimes, though, his stories and his scheming did get him in hot water, such as in 1760, when he decamped to Holland to attempt to assist in brokering peace between Britain and France during the height of the Seven Years' War. The problem was that warring factors within France's own court, again, Madame de Pompadour, were basically using him to outmaneuver each other in order to win the ultimate favor of the king.
I love that he is just so delightfully nutty that they're like, go broker peace. Right? Everybody's
yeah,
going to enjoy
you.
Do
it. Sure, why not? So as a result of this, the Dutch basically found our charming fabulist to be too much of a hot potato, politically speaking, to remain in their country, and basically booted him to London under yet another assumed name. And basically, for the most of the next 2 decades, Saint Germain bopped around Europe, charming and conning people wherever he went, amassing yet more crazy stories about his wisdom, his prowess, his long life, and just generally growing the legend. Building the brand, as it were. So in 1779, the Comte arrived in the Duchy of Schleswig, which is basically where, like, the border of modern-day Germany and Denmark would be. Mm-hmm. And he schmoozed Prince Charles of Hesse-Cassel.
So Hesse-Cassel. Mr. Meow was he born there? He was raised in a town named Schleswig, Iowa.
Oh, I was like, oh, maybe.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
Wait, duh, have you ever seen Mr. Meow eat?
I mean, hasn't everyone?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I've totally seen him chow down. Not a vampire. Never mind.
I do cook a lot of good food. He is very charming. Yes, he is very charming.
Does he have a chemistry set and he's always like doing weird little experiments in your kitchen?
Kind of.
Well, there you go.
I mean, he could be. He could be the next Saint Germain. He could be the first Saint Germain.
Mm-hmm. You don't know. I don't know. You don't know his life. We don't know.
I actually do know his life.
You don't know his undead life.
I don't know that.
So anyway, he schmoozed this Prince Charles of Hesse Castle. David Hasselhoff. He charmed David Hasselhoff, Zardu Hasselfrau, into installing him into an abandoned factory for the purpose of setting up production of a new way to dye fabric. This cat is really into making fabric fucking pretty. That is his jam.
And apparently cosmetics. Yeah. I am thinking that he might have been the first fashion designer truly in the making and from France.
Maybe. It's possible. He also got the prince kitted out with a laboratory of his own in his own little castle, the prince's castle, for the purpose of creating gemstones. And he confided in the prince that he was actually the son of this Transylvanian prince, what's his name? And despite his somewhat youthful appearance of about 45 years old, he was actually 88 years old.
What?
I thought he had been 300 for a while.
Hey, the story keeps changing, man. You can't pin him down, man. You can't pin him down.
I don't know his life.
So, I mean, I guess his magic alchemical oil of relay regenerous stuff totally worked. I mean, sure.
Does he just, like, bathe in it?
I just spackles that shit on.
Is it made from the souls of children?
I don't know. It's alchemy, so it's probably made out of, I don't know, philosopher's stone? I don't know what it's made out of. Probably bullshit. It's made out of bullshit.
It sounds yes, very much like it's made out of bullshit to me.
So, you know, he's installed this factory. He's got the confidence of this prince. And then on February 27th, 1784, he died.
What?
Or did he? He was buried. I think you can hear my air quotes. Buried.
Oh, yes.
On the 2nd of March in the Nicolai Church in Eckernford. So despite the Comte being a man of storied wealth and refinement, who was reputed to have his clothing literally encrusted in jewels that perhaps he had even created himself with a secret alchemical formulae, his estate was kind of sad, actually. And a historian who wrote a book about him in, I believe, the 80s, was actually able to track down a list of basically what his estate was that went into probate to be sold off after his demise. So this is basically a list of his belongings after his death. So again, remember, jewels, gold, all that kind of thing. No, not what they found. They found an extremely modest sum of money. So, you know, maybe a couple hundred dollars, not grand, but some money, but not a ton. Some clothes and various personal care items like razors, sunglasses, etc. And that was it. There were no gold, no jewels, no letters of note, learned tomes, no correspondence, nothing that would have told the real story of the Comte de Saint-Germain. It all basically vanished along with his life.
Because he vanished and he took it with him.
Quite possibly. However, this is not the end of the story, my friends. Oh no, in many ways, death is just the beginning. So this real-life Baron Munchausen's legend only grew after he was no longer around to consult. Despite church records of his death and burial in 1784, this mofo sure did get around in the following centuries. Behold the following alleged sightings of the Count. 1785, the year after he was supposedly wrapped in his winding sheet, he was seen out and about in Germany with none other than Anton Mesmer, the guy who invented hypnotism, as we know it.
What the fuck? Like, right? Out of everybody he could have been hanging out with.
Anton Mesmer. It gets weirder and more occult. In the same year, official Freemason records in France show that he was appointed to be their representative at a big Freemason convention, which, to be fair, had to be even weirder than your average anime or furry convention, but probably with fewer erotic body pillows for sale and less yiffing, but maybe not. I mean, the Freemasons do like to party.
Did you hear about the furries who apprehended the guy who was attacking the woman in California?
Furry justice.
Yes. Yeah. I'm all about that.
Yeah, I feel like if we had, like, like the guardian angels in New York City, if we had the guardian furries and they just kind of walked around and like yiffed at people who were being sinister, we would have no more crime.
You know what? That would put me off crime for sure.
That would fix up our creepy transit center downtown where people are shooty and insane and awful.
Yes, it would.
We need more furries.
No one would want to go to a place where you were yiffed by a furry.
Right?
If you were being crimey.
Yeah. I think it would work. It's not officer friendly. We need officer furry.
Less crime, more yiffing. Less crime, more yiffing. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you've solved it.
This is the answer to all of Seattle's problems.
Yeah. So, Freemasons, okay. Anton Mesmer. And then, after the storming of the goddamn Bastille during the French Revolution in 1789, the Comtesse de Adhémar claims to have had a long conversation with the Count in which he looked no older than when she'd last seen him decades ago, and he apparently, according to her, claimed to have been away in China and Japan. He allegedly had seen the future of what was in store for France, and told the Comtesse, "The French will play with titles and honors and ribbons like children. They will regard everything as a plaything, even the equipment of the Garde Nationale. There is today a deficit of some 40 millions, which is the nominal cause of the revolution. Well, under the dictatorship of philanthropists and orators, the national debt will reach thousands of millions." And then the Comtesse d'Adhémar once again wrote in 1821, "I have seen Saint-Germain again, each time to my amazement. I saw him when the queen was murdered," meaning Marie Antoinette, "on the 18th of Brumaire, on the day following the death of the Duc d'Enghien in January, 1815, and on the eve of the murder of the Duc de Berry." So he was almost like this harbinger of
doom
and murder, I guess, according to this particular Comtesse. I don't know. Again, who knows what actually happened?
So he was the crier of woe.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe if you're a vampire hanging out in, like, you know, places where beheadings and shit is going down, is kind of useful for you because instant, like, snacks.
Yes, and without having to do the killing yourself.
Right? You just, like, you take one of those headless bodies, you just pop a straw in there like it's a Capri Sun, and you're good to go. Yeah. I mean, why not? And then he pops up again and again in accounts of various people around the end of the 18th century and beginning of the 19th. And in 1821, a fellow called Albert Van Damme writes that he believes that the Count Saint-Germain has taken on a new identity as a man calling himself Major Fraser. This Albert Van Damme wrote, "He called himself Major Fraser, lived alone, and never alluded to his family. Moreover, he was lavish with money, though the source of his fortune remained a mystery to everyone. He possessed a marvelous knowledge of all the countries in Europe at all periods. His memory was absolutely incredible, and, curiously enough, he often gave his hearers to understand that he had acquired his learning elsewhere than from books. Many is the time he has told me, with a strange smile, that he was certain he had known Nero, had spoken with Dante, and so on."
Okay.
So again, this whole, you know, immortal bullshit, right?
Yeah. Or maybe it's just a common delusion and con men like immortal bullshit and happen to be very cunning.
I mean, quite possibly.
Or he could be a vampire. He's a vampire.
Vampire!
That is clearly
the vampire!
Only answer.
Yeah, only answer. It's vampire. Occam's vampire razor. It's And then shit gets weirder, as shit is wont to do. So in the 1880s and 1890s, the Theosophical Society, led by Madame Helena Blavatsky, gets super interested in our fair count. So without wandering too heavily down yet another goddamn rabbit hole, because otherwise this podcast would be like 700 hours and hours of just me blathering on, and nobody wants that, right?
And I would listen 700 hours, right?
I mean, guys, I can barely hold it together to be coherent and carry one goddamn episode, let alone, like, do this for several volumes. let me just sum up Theosophy as basically one of those hella popular mystical societies that were really big during the late 19th century. It was basically a new age, spiritual, esoteric woo chutney that culturally appropriated the shit out of Hinduism and Buddhism, mashed it up with the liberal sprinkling of good old-fashioned European occultism, and then yelled, "We're not a cult!" about it all.
Yeah, Lacey deals with a lot, that mash up.
Namaste.
These
guys were namaste cray. Okay. So we should probably, in fact, cover some of these really fascinating erstwhile sects in a longer episode. But for today's purposes, all you really need to know about these Theosophist guys is that they're super into the concept of ascended spiritual masters, with a capital M, who have accrued great wisdom and supernatural abilities over the centuries, and they're all hiding in plain sight amongst us, mostly in Tibet. Like the Sorcerer Supreme and shit. And I bet they also do look like Tilda Swinton. We're on to you, Swinton.
It may be Tilda Swinton.
Yep. She might be Saint Germain. We don't know her life.
Gosh. You know what? I could get behind Tilda Swinton as Saint Germain.
It's Tilda Swinton. It's my story. I'm sticking to it. Yeah.
Oh, here is our intern.
Our lovely intern, Rocky, is here to save us from vampires. So he'll bark if they come in and try to suck our blood.
He's going to bark if anyone comes in.
That's true. Keep us from revealing the truth about vampires. They're going to come bite us.
He barks if you walk in. Oh, my God, are you a vampire? I did invite you in.
You did.
Wait, Tilda Swinton, is that you?
I mean,
you?
I've been drinking sangria all night, so yeah. So according to the Theosophical Society, which Wikipedia takes great pains to note that it should not be confused with the United Lodge of Theosophists. So do not at us, United Lodge. It's not about you, okay? Saint Germain was actually not just a cool con man of the 18th century, but also has been incarnated as the following personages, okay? Are you ready?
I am ready for this.
Like, this is an incomplete list, by the way. I just picked some that were kind of the most amusing and best known, because it is a long and super damn bizarre list. So according to Madame Blavatsky and her peeps, other people that the Count has been incarnated as includes, but is possibly not limited to, the High Priest of Atlantis. I told you we'd get to Atlantis.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Hesiod. Like the Greek historian, Hesiod. Plato.
Wait.
Hesiod.
Okay, go ahead. That is a very interesting and very specific Hesiod. Reincarnation. Yeah, Hesiod. All right.
Plato is also Plato. Oh,
okay. Yeah. Well, you know,
but not
everyone's
so great,
Plato.
Just Plato. Saint Joseph, as in the Blessed Virgin Mary's hubby and Jesus' stepdad. Yeah.
So he was Jesus's dad.
Stepdad.
Well, still dad.
Stepdad. Yeah.
That's only because God doesn't
want God,
him to move in.
He's not even child support. The fuck? He's a fucking run guy. That's what he is. Yeah. Keeping your pants, God. I mean, seriously, don't do the crime if you're not going to do the time. At least, like, I don't know, put Jesus through school or some shit. I don't know. Anyway, I got a beef with you, God. Anyway.
More than a weekend dad, God.
Yeah, pretty much. So Merlin, as in like King Arthur Merlin.
Like
Merlin,
yeah. Like the wizard Merlin. Yeah. Merlin.
Christopher Columbus.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
that
Christopher Columbus.
Douche.
That fucking guy.
Oh man, yeah.
Roger Bacon. Francis Bacon. Not the painter, but Francis Bacon Who, Francis Bacon, by the way, who the Theosophists claim was actually the author of Shakespeare's plays.
Oh, of course.
Because that's how it works. Of course. Yeah, all these guys, plus a ton more that I was like, what?
Wow, yeah. That is really bizarre.
They really love this Saint Germain dude. They think he is the shit. And then it even gets stranger than that.
Oh, I'm sorry. If Saint Germain was real, I would want to have a conversation with
that
vampire.
Oh, yeah. I
want to
be like, dude, you know what people have been saying about you in your absence? Let me tell you.
Well, not only that, but just talk at me, Germain.
Right.
I'm curious.
Speak to me of your bullshit. But yeah, it gets weirder. So a Theosophist named Guy Ballard.
Wait.
Guy Ballard. And this was in the 20s or so, teens, 20s, he has this vision of a visitation from Saint Germain while he's out hiking on Mount Shasta in fucking California, and he describes this visitation thusly. It came time for lunch, and I sought a mountain spring for clear, cold water.
As you do.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Who cares about giardiasis? Whatever. Cup in hand, I bent down to fill it, when an electrical current passed through my body from head to foot.
Ew.
I looked around, and directly behind me stood a young man who, at first glance, seemed to be someone on a hike like myself. I looked more closely and realized immediately that he was no ordinary person. As this thought passed through my mind, he smiled and addressed me, saying, "My brother, if you will hand me your cup, I will give you a much more refreshing drink than spring water." I obeyed, and instantly the cup was filled with a creamy liquid. Handing it back to me, he said, "Drink it."
Wait a minute.
Yeah, no.
Wait a minute.
I don't, hey, I report the news, I don't make it.
Okay. I think that there is not a single one of us in this room right now who will not agree if a man hands you a cup with a creamy liquid.
Just drink it. Don't.
No.
Don't.
That's my safety tip for today. Just don't. I don't care if you're Saint Germain. I don't care if you're Jermaine Jackson. Do not drink a cup of creamy liquid that a random dude, when you're on a hike, just is like, "Hey, buddy, have a cup of cream." Don't do it. Don't.
And
don't.
It sounds like he tried to tase him ahead of time. I'm just saying.
Right? This whole thing seems real
in
sketch.
In the woods, tased him.
Yeah.
Drink my creamy
is...
liquid.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Oh my God. This is the start of a bad horror movie.
Right?
That's what this
right?
is.
I mean, okay. You know, to be fair, though, his creamy Gerard juice has got to be better than this sangria with watermelon Jolly Ranchers. So, this mysterious milkshake purveyor turns out to be none other than Ascended Master Count Saint Germain, who goes on to dictate the contents of two books to this guy Ballard, named Unveiled Mysteries and The Magic Presence. And then, because the Count just has a fuck ton to say, this turns into a series that's denser than the goddamn Song of Fire and Ice.
Wow.
Seriously. This fucking thing puts the Silmarillion to shame. All in all, 20 books been published in this series. 20 books. And a religion called the Saint Germain Movement is founded upon all of these teachings.
Can you get these books?
Yes. The Saint Germain Movement has a publishing arm that they use to put these things out. You can fucking order them.
I kind of want to order them. I'm just curious.
All 20 volumes set. Go for it. Maybe they have it for Kindle. I don't
know. Speaking of books... Hey, on our website, we now have updated a section where it is, you know, just reads that we like, sometimes based on episodes that where we've done, you know, material pulling. Other times it's just a good book and we are doing a recommended read on it. So if you are curious, check us out, disturbinginterests.com. You can also email us at...
disturbinginterests@gmail.com.
And where are you going to find us on Twitter?
Oh, Jesus Christ. DI_podcast.
Every time it's like a quiz. It's
I know.
Hilarious.
Getting better at it.
You are. And where do they find us on Instagram?
DI_podcast also.
And on the Facebook?
Disturbing Interests.
We are super easy
We're
to find,
everywhere.
Guys.
Are we good at it? Are we frequent posters? Well, you do pretty good on the Twitter. I suck at the rest of it.
I do post the Wednesday What the Fuck
you
Wednesday
meme
every factoid.
It's cool
factoid.
Stuff. It's interesting. Follow along.
Yeah, I think it's very random, too. I like the fact that the heart shape came from a plant that was actually contraceptive in Rome, and then they used it all, and it became extinct because people liked bone in Rome.
They did.
Yes.
Yeah. God should have used that. Given some to Mary, it's all I'm saying. Well, I mean, I like Jesus, but, like, God should have stuck around is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Should have stuck around God. Anyway, now that I've made everyone that's a Christian listening to this broadcast very angry at me, a kid, you're fine, God, you're fine, Jesus. Probably you don't exist, but, you know, that's cool, too. You know, it's yeah. Oh, God. I'm just digging a deeper hole. Anyway.
Aren't you happy that you can just, like, cut all of that out and post if you want
if
to.
If I want
too.
To. I don't want to. I'm unrepentant. Unrepentantly going to hell. Not that there is one. Anyway, so back to religion. Not that one, but this one. There is a religion or a philosophical grouping around Saint Germain called the Saint Germain Movement.
The only thing stopping it from being a full-blown religion is money and power.
Right. Well, because this is kind of an older one. And the teachings and philosophies themselves are referred to by the group as the I am activity. And the members, cultists, I mean members, are known as the I am students.
Who's the teacher?
Saint Germain, apparently.
Is he still bopping around out there teaching?
I don't know. Writing because books? The group still does exist today, but membership has dwindled greatly, and as far as we can tell, a lot of older people, they're not necessarily going out proselytizing and trying to get more people into this, because Guy Ballard, the gentleman who was handed a magical milkshake of Saint Germaininess, he died in 1939, and then his wife Edna, who kept this whole movement going, also passed away in 1971.
So Guy Ballard, was he connected to William Ballard, who our neighborhood is named after that we're in here right here? Okay.
All right. I mean, maybe, but I didn't.
It's definitely a question because
I know Puerto Ballardo, where you live.
Yes. So they have a temple here, though, right?
They do. So the main headquarters is in beautiful, scenic Schaumburg, Illinois.
Schaumburg.
And there are approximately 300 chapter temples all around the world.
Really?
And, yeah. I mean, they don't necessarily have, like, they're not necessarily widely attended giant tabernacles, but, yeah, there's about 300 all over the world, multiple continents. And that actually does bring us to our fair city of Seattle. So if you go up to lovely, scenic Aurora Avenue, the craziest street in Seattle.
That shit crazy. Like, the craziest
don't
of animal
poo. Don't get on
poo.
The Aurora bus. You will die. It's...
Well, Lacey here saw a guy trying to do... what was it, crack on the bus today?
It was like crack or something. It was the craziest thing. There wasn't anything there, but he was trying.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, Aurora Avenue is not a... It's not for the faint of heart. Let me just put it that way. But on this lovely stretch of our fair city is this really groovy old building that was actually built in 1925 as a, like, vaudeville and movie theater called the Arabic Theater.
Wow.
And it has these sort of, like, fantasy, Arabicate kind of windows and kind of roofs. It's a neat looking building.
Can you get a picture of this for our Instagram
and Twitter?
I can.
And if you go online, too, if you want to, and you just Google... I am Reading Room Seattle. It'll pop right up. And that's what it's called. It's called the I am Reading Room. And you can actually just go there or you can go to the website. You can join up. You can get these books. They will send you.
Disturbing Interest would like to underscore that we do not encourage you to do anything that we do.
I'm just saying,
or
yeah, I don't say
about.
Go join them. But like, if you're curious, if you want to read more from the horse's mouth, you can totally do that. That's like, they will let you do that.
Or if you want to get abducted by vampires
in
Seattle,
sure.
That is also a possibility.
I do.
Oh, okay. Well,
I mean,
apparently
go you know
to the
go
I am reading
yeah, okay,
room.
The I am reading room.
Okay.
All yeah. Right. I mean, I promised y'all a local Seattle connection. I delivered. So now.
Lacey walks in there. Excuse me. I hear I can read here.
I can read
what
here.
What type of books can I read?
I have a very attractive neck. It's a neck. Yeah.
I like books about necks.
So now we can tie our meandering Saint Germain back into the last episode, finally. After all of this Sturm und Drang, tying it back into New Orleans.
Back into New Orleans.
Back there. Back to New Orleans. Because there's a connection to that city. In the form of a mysterious fellow who called himself Jacques Saint-Germain.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. Who turned up in the Crescent City about 1902, claiming to have immigrated from the south of France. So he moves into this posh little building on the corner of Ursulines and Royal in the French Quarter.
Which could be very possible, and he not be connected to this other dude, because if you moved from that portion of France, if that was your neighborhood, maybe that ended up becoming your name.
Yeah, he might have nothing to do with it.
Which, by the way, I have seen this house that he moved into in the French Quarter.
Yeah, it's kind of
it's beautiful.
Schmancy.
I want this house. And the place across the street makes some of the best old style like soda jerk fountains around.
So yeah, you could, and I mean, you can just go on a tour. They will absolutely take you there, or you can just walk around, like, Google map it if you're visiting and check it out. It's there. It's still there.
Maybe grab some dinner at Muriel's first. Walk down the street. It's right there.
Get
on St. Anne.
Get the garlic bread. Get a lot of garlic on your food. Whole lot of garlic.
Yep.
Maybe some escargot with garlic. Garlic the shit out of it. Garlic, garlic.
Yes, garlic.
Garlic.
All the garlic. Roast the garlic. Smear yourself in the garlic.
Just garlic the hell out of it, my friends.
Maybe spritz yourself with some holy water just to be safe.
Grab around in
go
it.
For it.
Yeah.
With it. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, maybe like a silver turtleneck. Just go for it. Yeah. So anyway, this guy moves into this lovely house here, and then he starts throwing some truly lavish dinner parties for the city's elite. And in addition to the delicious food and fine wine that this fella's serving up, this particular Jacques Saint-Germain is also serving up some fabulous stories. And he is just this amazing raconteur, if you recall, as was the original Saint-Germain. And he regales these visiting socialites with stories of this exotic travel that he's done and of historical events hundreds of years in the past that, nonetheless, he kind of recounts as though he was there.
Very firsthand in all of his stories.
Very much. He also claims to be a direct descendant of the more famous historical Comte Saint-Germain that we've been talking about earlier, and even has some portraits of the Count in his house that people felt look uncannily like the current owner, who is even about the same age, around 40, 45, as the legendarily ageless Count Saint-Germain. Rumors, mostly in jest, begin to circulate that perhaps this is actually the original Count Saint-Germain after all. And at all of these lavish spreads, the host is never actually seen partaking of the food, but rather stands apart drinking wine from a very fancy chalice.
And from a very specific bottle, too.
Yes.
He had his own fancy special wine that only he drank that was sealed in wax.
So they say, yes. Again, and again this is...
bucket of salt.
Guys, this is the meat and potatoes of all of the spooky vampire, ghost, witchy, boo-woo-woo-woo, voodoo-doo-doo tours of the quarter. And bless them for trying to make a buck. And they're fun.
Hey,
and you should go on them.
I know, like, an owner of one of the tours down there, and more power to her.
Yeah,
she
no, I mean, totally take one of those tours. They're really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, again, take everything in history, everything in modernity with a grain of salt.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know, like, seriously.
The news, like, everything.
Be a skeptical bastard is what I'm trying to tell you. But still be open to woo-woo because it's fun. So basically, be the Mulder and the Scully together that you want to see in the world.
And you know me. I totally back the woo.
That there's a scientific rational explanation for everything.
I do, too. I just don't think that we understand a lot of it yet.
Wow, Jay. Three women in your room and they're all married. You just get crap for luck.
We've just had a sudden outburst of Regina's lovely husband. I believe he's been out, perhaps partaking of wine evening.
Yeah.
Or something.
So
probably not from a fancy chalice or his own personal bottle, but I don't know, maybe.
But you know.
Yeah.
His brother is in town. My brother-in-law is in town visiting us tonight. And so, yes, they went out and had a good time. And apparently he wanted to be heard tonight.
Yes. So it's been a very guest-rich show.
It has.
But so, and I swear to God, I'm bringing this motherfucking plane in for a landing. Get out your air traffic control sticks, your lightsabers. Oh, air traffic control, because I swear we're
all
done.
Here doing the arm motions now.
Right? So, in any case, things take, as they always do in this show, a rather darker turn several months after Jacques Saint-Germain's move to the city.
As is our jam.
Yes. So one night, the police are called to the house after a woman falls from the upper balcony of the house to the hard cobbled street below, breaking both her legs. The story goes that she tells the cops that she leaped off the balcony of her own accord to get away from Saint-Germain, who had bitten her neck and tried to drink her blood. The police get this terrified, hysterical woman to the hospital, and tell this Jacques Saint Germain, dude, it's cool. She's probably just crazy or like, you know, a hooker or whatever.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, you know, just
Storyville. Clearly yeah. from Storyville. Yeah.
Show up, you know, tomorrow morning, come on down to the precinct, we'll get this all straightened out. It's fine, it's fine. Well, then the next morning, when he fails to show up, the gendarmes head to his home to discover that the Count has vanished, leaving the bulk of his possessions behind him. So now, these possessions, allegedly, are pretty freaking weird. And there are multiple stories about what they found, probably all of which are bullshit, but let's just go with it. Some stories say that they found clothing from many different time periods scattered around, some of them splattered in old, dried blood. Other accounts tell of the police finding a large store of wine bottles that have been opened but then recorked. But they're not recorked. Full of wine. Not just wine, anyway. Mm. But also, can we all guess? Blood.
So, can I tell you my favorite one
okay,
that I heard?
Okay, sure.
Okay, so my favorite one that I heard was while he was there, there were also young socialites who were going missing.
Yes.
And their bodies were beginning to turn up on the outside area, kind of over by Lafitte's and things like that, in an area that they should not have been found in during that time period. And they were missing blood, let's just put it like
drained
that.
Drained of their
they were
blood.
Drained.
Missing blood.
Yes. So when they were found, eventually, because of the bite mark and all of that, him fleeing, they thought it might be him. They show up, they look in his house, and as they search the house, they find absolutely nothing except in the wine cellar or the wine room. They find one bottle that had been left behind.
And it was full of watermelon sangria. That shit is undrinkable.
The truest evil drink of them all, watermelon sangria.
Yeah.
In a wax-covered bottle like yes. he used to like.
I think that they probably actually just found a vast collection of One Direction souvenirs, including an erotic body pillow of Harry Styles. But, you know, who knows? Who's to say what's lost to the mists of time? Now, none of the stuff that we're talking about, is there any official record that you can find? Or, I mean, there's not... This is all kind of hearsay, legendary, blah, blah, blah. So,
and even if you could find a record of it, which, I mean, in the New Orleans library...
Not really a record-y place. Yeah.
Let's say even if you could find a record of it, like some kind of newspaper print or something like that from way back in the fucking age, we know how yellow journalism works. Yeah.
So again, just a whole, the Great Salton Sea worth of salt for this, guys. Because, yeah. But... And here's my little coda. That's not the last time the Count, or someone claiming to be him, has popped up in the past century. No, indeed. In 1972, a Parisian named Richard Chanfray appeared on French television claiming to be the legendary Comte Saint-Germain, and to prove it, he apparently turned lead into gold on a fucking Coleman camp stove for the cameras.
For the cameras?
Yeah. So they say,
Is there recording of this someplace?
Possibly in the archives of French TV. Now, I just, again, this is well before the golden age of Netflix, so they'll put anything on, you know.
Because they won't do that now.
And remember, this is the era of, like, Uri Geller and shit like that, when people love those kind of weird
I saw
fakes.
A reality TV show of people wrapping presents over the holidays. So I'm pretty sure that they will still put anything on
literally
the fucking...
Literally any, yeah.
And yet no one will give us our own travel show.
Right?
Come on, Travel
Come on.
Channel.
Call us. Call us, Travel Channel. So Chanfray sadly died by suicide in 1983. Or did he? I mean, with this Saint Germain character, who really knows? Who can say?
Did they find, like, practically nothing in his estate?
I could not find that out.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. I mean, who will the Comte Saint Germain reemerge as next? My theory? Andrew Yang. And he's turning lead into gold alchemically, and that's how he's going to fund a universal basic income. I mean, it's no fucking weirder than anything else that's going on in politics right now. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I would go with Tilda Swinton.
It could be Tilda. I mean, Tilda Swinton. Yeah, clearly.
Definitely.
And that, friends and neighbors, is the weird and twisty and probably at least partially, if not totally, crazy batshit bullshit story of the many lives of the allegedly immortal, but probably fucking not, Comte Saint Germain.
Yay. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, my God. Oh, I made it through, and I didn't finish my watermelon sangria.
I'm so sorry for you. Chug, chug.
Oh, God. Oh, you know this is going to taste the same coming up as it did going down.
It really is just terrible. You are actually... Oh, that was a big drink. Yeah.
No, for posterity.
Yeah. Pour one out for the homies. It'll be okay.
Oh, God. This would... If you pour this on a grave... It would resurrect whatever the hell was in that grave. They would dig their way up and they would slap you before going, dragging you back to hell with them.
That reminds me, I've got to tell you, I was wrong about the magicians. They got me with season 3.
Oh, you're they loving did. The magicians. I am. Yeah, I pretty much went to like the non-magical version of Break Bills. Mm. Yeah, that's why I'm like I am, broken and weird.
I like it. I'm here for that.
I fucking love that show.
I was just raised by my parents, which is why I am broken and weird.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why I'm weird, but, like, college did not help me.
Same.
It did give me excellent research skills. And I do love an interlibrary loan, which, of course, I have. Have I done for this? No. No. I'm giving you guys the quick and dirty for everything. But yes. Yes.
I mean, you could just have that tattooed on your lower back, the quick and dirty.
The quick and dirty.
That is your nickname. All your screen name, all and everything, the quick and dirty.
The quick and dirty, yep. Yes.
So on that note, take care of each other and...
Don't become a frequently resurrected, theosophical, ascended master who's actually probably full of bullshit.
And you might be disturbed.
But you're not a vampire.
Thank you for listening, friends. Remember, if you would like to reach out to us, you can find us on Facebook at The Disturbing Interest Podcast, Twitter at podcast_DI, Instagram at DI Podcast. You can find us online at disturbinginterest.com, or you can email us at disturbinginterest@gmail.com. Our P.O. Box is 70515 Seattle, Washington 98127. Remember to rate, like, and tell your friends, and we'll talk at you soon.